Do you find yourself feeling angry about maybe your spiritual upbringing or religious upbringing as a child? Or maybe you have anger that this relationship just keeps going in this vicious cycle and neither of you know how to fix it. Well, today I'm a special guest that's going to help us out with that in a spiritual realm. Welcome back to the Empath and Narcissist Podcast, where I share messages about spiritual healing from narcissistic abuse with human design. Because I believe your karmic experience has awakened you to your authentic soul. You just need the map to call your power back. I am your host, Raven Scott, and I'm an author and trauma-informed spiritual mentor. Maitreyi Ma is an award-winning author, psychologist, and spiritual teacher who has developed a worldwide following, bringing forth the deep wisdom that manifests to her, both through her inner guru, Baba, and in her teacher, the renowned Indian mystic Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba. But here's where this gets interesting. The Baba that has loved and guided her throughout her long life is the all-knowing spiritual consciousness that embodies divine love and speaks to, and in recent years, through her. And while she met and lived in the ashram of the living guru, Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba, in India for 8 months before he passed from this earth, the immortal spiritual consciousness he embodied has been side by side with her since her college years, long before she met him and after. Her story, beautifully told in her new book, Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey, is a story of a profound transformation that reveals how she came to experience the spiritual ecstasy and beauty that her guide, Baba, brought to her while integrating it into the real world of wife, mother, psychologist, and spiritual teacher to live a life in awakened, joyful consciousness. With roles as the past founder and president of Ananda Seva Mission, founding board members of the Kundalini Research Network, and a previous director of the Spiritual Emergency Network, she has long been a guiding light in the spiritual community. So let's get into this conversation with her. Welcome, Maitreyi. I hope I said all those names correctly.
Did you did a great job. Oh, sometimes it's the Sanskrit names are a little
I
hard.
know they are a little bit hard sometimes. I don't know if we talked about unitive consciousness, though. Can you educate us on what is that?
Yes. Well, unitive consciousness means that underlying everything, there is underlying all forms, animals and people and plants and rocks and trees and my desk, everything is one essential consciousness. There is one, and I think that modern physics is coming in this direction also of recognizing that there is one unitive whole of being that underlies a conscious aware intelligence that underlies everything that it is. And a lot of people call that God. But that everything is, all forms are the form of that one essential being, that one essential unitive whole consciousness that underlies and is everything that is. So that's the idea of unitive consciousness, that there is one essence, one consciousness that we all share.
And we share it. It sounds like it sounds better than thinking, oh, it's a God who controls or judges or kind of, what's the difference?
I think that God is, the reason I don't use the word term God is because it means a lot of different things to different people. And it definitely does not mean a person or a an entity that's controlling everything. It is more like everything in the universe is one. It's one being, one wholeness, that we're a part of that unitary whole. We are not separate from each other, from the animals, from the plants. And when you really go out in nature or in special moments, you can feel that wholeness, that connectedness that you have. And we all want to be connected. We call that love. When we really feel that opening in our heart and we feel that connectedness to everything, right? And so that is a controlling God that dictates. It's an awareness that I call love, that is everything that is. It's that unitive whole, that glue that holds it all together.
And how do we access this as ordinary people? Because it seems like it's a far-reaching concept.
Well, you know, I think it's accessed sometimes. People do it in different ways. Through meditative practice, we can really refine our ability to access that. And that's why people meditate, is to get, well, people have a lot of other reasons for meditation too, but the core reason to meditate is to bring yourself into alignment so that you can experience the wholeness of being and that you can experience this unitive consciousness. We have moments of that sometimes in nature when you're just like, you go, oh man, this is so beautiful. And you just feel that moment where there's no thought, there's no, it's just like awe. You're just in awe. Or the moment when you look into the eyes of someone you love and you're lost. There's just the feeling of love, right? You know, those moments when we cross the boundary of I and mine and we let go into something deeper and whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know I've absolutely experienced that. And I remember back when I was in religion, I remember feeling the most connected to what I called God back then when I was in the forest, when I was in nature. I was like, this is where God is. And that makes a lot of sense. I was feeling that unitive consciousness.
Yeah. And we moved from the farm to Lombard, which was in a suburb where there were just, you know, houses, each one on about a half an acre. It was a suburb, and it was, I found it to be a wasteland, you know, for me. I missed my animals. They weren't there. I had my pet duck, Jimmy, but he died. He got poisoned by some rat poisoning that a neighbor put out. And then my dog died, and, you know, all the wonderful magic of nature was gone, and I was stuck in this very arid place, and I didn't like it. But then we moved from there to town, and I liked that better, but still, I think that I always felt different. I was very philosophical as a child, and I would contemplate things, and I didn't feel like the other kids. And I think I had a little bit of ADD too, you know, so I wasn't great in school. And I felt connected to trees. I could hug them, and I could feel the energy from the trees move into me. And like everything would like float away like clouds, you know, all the stress in my life. And I would just feel this calm peace emanate from the trees. So I felt this communion with trees and with animals that I could connect.
And like a true empath.
I felt I could feel what it was like being them. And I felt that there was a reciprocal flow. And I remember one experience around that time. There was a little hill with a water tower on it at the top of our street. And I walked up there this one night. It was late,
And it had just gotten dark, and I walked up by myself up onto the hill, and I laid down on the grass, and I looked up at the stars. And, you know, I just tried to envision what is a, how far it is, a mile, 100 miles, 1,000 miles, 1,000,000 miles, like, and how far to the moon and how far to the stars. And my mind just sort of went out into this, you know, and I kind of, I felt like the nature is my mother, and this divine presence, this was my father, you know, and it felt like there was this underlying archetypal relationship. I would call it that now. I didn't call it that then. I think we all have deep within us. And it really connected me to the universe. And I really saw that, you know, whatever stress was in my life was in this little band of people world and of human life, and that there's all this life, all living in this harmony of the of universal principles and laws that are governing the stars and the solar systems and the microcosm. And there's just this vast network of life.
Yeah. And so what did you do? How did you react when this presence first appeared next to you?
Well, it first appeared as just a sense of a presence. When I was distressed, it would come and just be there. And it was very comforting. I just felt comfort and soon felt tremendous love. So there wasn't any reaction except for maybe attachment, you know.
Don't go.
Yeah, like this beautiful love, you know. But I did have a reaction at one point, because I didn't know what this presence was. And there was no name, no words, no guidance like that. And I thought, the only being I've ever heard of that is like this presence is Christ, right? Jesus. So I thought, oh, this must be Jesus. And then I thought, oh, but he lived 2,000 years ago. Why am I here now? You know, and I would actually cry myself to sleep, because I would be so sad thinking I had missed this presence, this holy presence when I was, and that, you know, and I felt maybe I did something wrong, that I'm here when it's not here. But then I felt from the presence that that was not correct. There was nothing wrong. This was what was meant to be. And later, I'm not so sure it was Christ per se, but it was that holy presence that was Christ, that is all holy presence, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine it'd be confusing too. So it's really good that it comforted you and said, no, that's not correct.
The
ideas on earth are not correct about that. Don't miss out. I'm right here with you.
Yeah.
And You're right there. How did this presence then influence your life as you became, you know, older and an adult? And
what happened is that I began to externalize myself into my teens, and I forgot about it. You know, I became very engaged, like most teenagers, and I. That experience, that childhood experience, began to fade from my mind. And I actually went through a period of going to a lot of different churches and trying to find that God presence in the churches. And I just didn't feel
it. Did you find it?
No, I didn't, you know. And then by the time I was about 18 or 19, or even 16, I forget what age exactly, but I just had gone to a number of different churches and tried to, you know, check it out. And I found a youth group in a church that I loved being a part of, and it was fun, but I didn't feel that divine presence. And I finally came to the realization that, you know, I thought maybe I'm an atheist, you know, that I don't feel it here, you know. And And so that lasted until I experimented with psychedelics in my early 20s. And then I got into profound experiences of divinity in every molecule of existence and everything that is, feeling the unitary wholeness of being. And from there,
did you find that spirit or that love? I was going to ask you, what would you, in hindsight or retrospect, what would you call that presence that was there with you as a child?
God presence. In hindsight, it was for me probably the first manifestation of the presence that came later in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. That was Baba, that's been my inner guide and also my external guru since my early 20s. I've felt this presence with me. But this
so when
presence
you met, we have to, in your story, we have to go to Baba, but we'll get there. There's a connection between Baba, who is a real Hindu monk, guru.
He was a Hindu guru, Sri Sri Anandamurti. Yeah, so I had first this inner experience of first just this presence that I didn't have a name, and then later a presence, same holy presence, but gave me the name Baba. And by then I was doing yogic meditation, and he came first in my meditation, and this whole big story, but that's for the book. At one point, for some deep spiritual experiences, my Baba said to go to India and to see him in physical form. And so, you know, me and my husband bought one-way tickets to India on some Arab airlines, you know.
That's special. So your husband was on board to do
Yeah, yeah. He was also doing the meditation and had learned from the same monks and came over and taught us, who were devotees of Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba. Baba's turns out, I first heard it internally like that, but it turns out that Baba is a name, a sort of a name of respect to different gurus, to male gurus. But interestingly enough, in Slavic languages, it also means grandmother. So it's kind of interesting. wise one, right? Yes. And so Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba was the physical person who I then met, who I felt the same vibration in, and I experienced miraculous things happen around. But, you know, I feel that Baba, or that divine presence, doesn't originate with a man in India. The man in India was somebody who melted into that presence. And the presence that I feel internally is that same presence, and that there's only one, you know. In yogic philosophy, Shiva Shakti Atma Kam Brahma. There's Shiva, or consciousness, and Shakti, or divine creative Mother Nature energy, right, that manifests everything that is. They're one and the same. One is within the other. They're inseparable, like two sides of a piece of paper. You know, they're inseparable, and the infinite Brahma is the combination of the manifest and the unmanifest, the pure being consciousness and the created, all created forms, and that, to me, that divine presence is in all forms. And it's in an essence of all forms. It's in the essence of being. And it manifests for me as this inner guidance, inner wisdom that flows through from a place that isn't my rational conscious mind, but from what I consider a higher, you know, your higher self, or a deeper, higher level, and flows into the mind and out. And it's the same as that which I found in my guru in India. But I feel the origin is in the depth of being, and it's something accessible to all of us. It's in the essence of being, and not in, doesn't originate in a form, but that form manifested it as a person, which fulfilled a great longing for me since my childhood, right? That I wished that being had been, that I could meet that person in the world. And then I was able to in the form of my guru.
I really think that this is an interesting concept, especially for those of us who believe more in the spirituality realm and maybe who are raised in more of the religious realm. Like, you know, it's believed by a lot of people that Jesus is the only physical manifestation of God. But you're describing that Baba was, and I know, you know, being Buddhist now, like Buddha was, like, it's like this physical manifestation of the divine love and compassion.
That's right. Huh? Yeah, of the one. And when the personality melds back into the one, then those divine qualities that you're talking about, love and compassion and peace and deep understanding, and they begin to embody and differently in different people, because the personalities are different, you know, but they embody, and you can feel, you know. I remember sitting in with my guru in Darshan, it's called, Sight of the Guru, and sitting there with him and just feeling such immense, unbelievable love just flowing out of him into everyone, you know, that it was just divine bliss to be in the presence, you know.
I think that these gurus are very old wise souls, like choosing to manifest on earth to kind of bring some of that higher vibration and love onto the earth, because it's a very thick, dense space here.
Kind of like that, yeah. I would say that they're maybe old wise souls that are old enough and wise enough to let go of their sense of personal existence and to melt themselves back into that infinite, and to become like a clear lake that you can see the deep bottom, you know. They just become clear. And so you can see into them. You can see that universal essence flows through. And, you know, this kinds of gurus, the Baba was, and I think there have been others. I think they're a bit rare, but they are out there, or they have been out there. People would say that he visited them at their home, like 500 miles away from someplace else where he was giving darshan, he was giving a talk. You know, all sorts of miraculous things happened. Such beings don't seem to be bound by the same material, like it's like they've transcended that level of material, the thickness of the material. And when I am around not only Baba, but other gurus that I've seen who I feel divine presence with, I feel like they open up a little space of sunshine. They open up a subtle energy in the thickness of this realm.
Now, as I'm hearing you, I'm like, gosh, this just sounds amazing to actually be in the presence and sit with. But if you have that fine tune, like you've experienced true guru, we also have talked about on this podcast, there are some covert narcissists within the spiritual realm calling themselves gurus. Like, how can you tell between those and the authentic gurus?
It's a good question. And I don't know if you have to follow your heart and what you feel. And a teacher can teach you all about something, but a guru embodies a vibration that you feel, and you feel that vibration. But sometimes you might feel that around someone who is not so developed. But, you know, this story around that the disciple goes to the guru. The guru is not a developed being, but the disciple's devotion and love is so pure that what they see is the God self, and what they experience is that. And so for them, it doesn't really matter. You know, if you see the divine and you feel the divine has chosen to embody in whatever limited form there is, you know. But the problem is that sometimes the teachings can be a little off if the person is a bit narcissistic or has some undeveloped traits that are not yet fully worked with. Those can be a bit misleading. But I still don't think it's necessarily a problem, because it's your experience of divine presence. And if you are someplace and you don't feel it, it may be there for others. They may feel it. If you don't feel it, God doesn't want to talk to you in that form. You know, God doesn't want to be there for you in that presence. It's not embodying for you. And so
as long as that fake guru is not manipulating people into their own selfish desires, that's where it kind of
gets to be slow. And people in any position of power can definitely do that and use the power of their own mind. Politicians do it all the time, right? Use the power of their own mind to influence the thinking of other people. And that can be destructive. The true guru, the yogis say guru, God, and self are one. So the true guru is that infinite Brahma, that infinite God self. The deepest self of you is that unitary whole of being. And God, what is God but that oneness from which we all come, that infinite love, right? And so guru needs to embody that. And it may embody that for some people and not for others. And if you find yourself in a situation where you think you're being misled, or that you've been a part of a situation that's suddenly sounding like a cult in the worst sense of the word, the God within is always present and always accessible. And to make that living presence of divinity the pole star of your life, the focus, regardless of if you have a physical guru or if you don't, or if you're part of a community or you're not part of a community, or you're feeling alienated from a community that you start to see the flaws in. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Hold to the divine. Hold to that. And you always have that. Nobody can take it away from you. And sometimes it's not with a group and with a physical person. You know, for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, the divine can talk in a babbling brook or in a robin singing or in the sound of the wind, you know. The divine is the substantive nature of everything that is. And so holy can be anywhere.
I truly, truly believe that. I remember being in this beautiful forest when I was 17, and it was exactly that. Just like when you were on the farm, like I felt the divine. That was the most magical place ever. And then I felt it there in nature. I'd have to be curious to see what your human design chart, which ties into that hermit to line two profile, is you have that connection with nature, a deep connection.
Yeah, you know, nature is a place we find it, where we find, and we have those moments of connection, you know, where we feel, we're in a state of and a state of awe, right? And it happens in nature. It can happen looking into the eyes of a loved one. And just your heart is open, and suddenly there's not two, there's one, you know? And we touch God's presence in many different ways in our lives. Meditative practices, yogic practices, Buddhist practices they're really there to, and also there are Christian meditations, and they're all there to guide us in a practices that allow us to bring that presence more in our lives, to feel it more frequently, to feel it more consistently, to have greater access to it. And whatever goes on in the external world, it's that access. And that's with you, you know. And
tell me more about different ways to be able to tune into our power and our divine God self within, so that we can heal our confusion and our abuse. And I said I wasn't going to talk about anger, but you brought that up, and I'm like, oh, maybe we are angry that we have been, you know, raised or accidentally fell into a cult or some type of, you know, controlling religious. So,
yeah, I think meditation is a big gift to be able to connect. But I do think that you need to put your heart into your meditation, you know, to feel the love, to feel, whether you meditate on the Mother Mary or Kuan Yin or a mantra or a simple breathing practice, but whatever you do, feel, here is God's presence. Here is the presence of infinite love, infinite compassion, divine grace, the unitary wholeness of being. Here is the love that holds us all together. And breathe it into you, and then as you exhale, surrender, let go into it, let go and let God, you know. And in this way, when we connect with that presence that's everywhere, in every blade of grass, every tree, every living being, we connect with that essence of love. And the deepest connection is through meditation. Being in nature sometimes can put us in that mood. We can feel it. We can feel that awe that for a moment, and then but the practice puts us in the states, I think in Christianity called rapture, and yogic practices called samadhi, state of absorption in divine presence, through concentrating on it, through focusing on it, through bringing it into our lives and making ourselves available to it. It's not something governed by anybody else. And there are so many people who follow many different religions or gurus or different belief systems that feel it or that don't feel it usually. And then there are those that do because their hearts are sincere. And a lot of times they're very simple people who feel it. I think being more intellectual is a challenge to get over your intellect, right? And your ideas,
you're
beliefs.
Doubting yourself. Judgments. You're like, wait, what's that? I need proof. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The judgment, doubt, lack of trust and fear really become impediments. But there's stuff that they're kind of universal and we all have to work with them. And one may be more up for us than the other. Maybe we don't trust. Maybe we doubt that we're able to move beyond our difficulties and our issues and things that have happened to us, or, you know, bad parents, being a part of a cult that we realize is like you've been brainwashed, and or having a partner who is pretty devastating, you know, all these things we can feel that we're bogged down by them. But when you really get into your own spirit and your connection to the divine, it's yours. And I think that the more we explore that with heart, with feeling, not just with mental, oh, I know this is good for me, therefore I'm going to say this mantra and I'm going to do this. You got to bring your heart there. And, you know,
do you think that kind of meditation with the heart can melt away the anger, or is that just a great idea?
Anger is a secondary reaction. Anger is not a primary reaction. I'm hurt. I'm threatened. I feel devastated. And I don't want to crumble under that. Therefore, I'm going to fight. It's fight or flight, right? You know, and but that's a this the anger that I'm going to fight is a secondary reaction. So you're left with anger, but underneath the anger, there's pain. The anger is there because there's wounding, and so I do believe that it's necessary to look beneath the covers and see the real feelings that are there, which are sometimes harder to deal with because they're much more vulnerable. But they allow you to kind of reconcile with yourself. And when you get into your spiritual being, you're not limited by any external people or circumstance. That's outside of you. The love that is in you, in the deeper level of your being, whether you feel it or not, whether you connect with it or not, the deeper level of your being is made of that infinite unitary wholeness, that divine love, divine infinite peace that surrounds pure being. That is the essence of you. That's the essence of everyone. You may not feel it. The people who have harmed you, if someone has harmed you, that's their essence too. They just may be out of touch with it. And so they're acting in ways that are destructive because they're not in touch with that infinite love.
And I think the difficulty in that is that if we approach this relationship through love and they're not in touch with love, they can backstab us. They can harm us more. And they don't see that they're coming from that lack of love. They think they're coming from their essence, but it's really ego. So it's really difficult sometimes to deal with these situations. And sometimes I feel like coming from love can harm us when the other person's not coming from love. What are your thoughts and advice about that?
I don't think so. It depends on the level of love. If the level of love is, I'm going to love you because I need you to love me.
Okay.
Then, yeah, they may not be able to love you the way you want to be loved. They're going to, they don't know how. They're wounded.
Mm-hmm.
If the level of love comes to a different level, I am loving you because you are a living being, a part of God. You can do whatever you want. I'm not attached to you. If you can have that sort of a little bit of autonomy where you can allow another person to be who they are and to work out their stuff, and you be who you are and work on your path and without dependence on them being different. You know, whenever we want someone else to be different, we disempower ourselves. Inevitably, because you know what, you don't really have control over them and their path. They have to work their own path. What you have control over is you and your path. And so when you connect with the love within and the spirit within, and you make that who you are, and you make that your source of nurturance, that your source of sustenance, not the external person who may or may not be able to meet your needs. They may be so wounded that they're inevitably going to not meet your needs because of their own issues. But if the more you can draw that back into finding the substance within you, in not within you as a personality, but within the greater self, then you may find that the universe is bringing things to you that you may have ignored. But when you start paying attention, you go, oh, this beautiful thing is there. Oh, this came to me. You know, you start to notice it. You start to feel that there's love abounding around you in the plants and the animals and in the person you meet at the grocery store. You know, And then the power of another person over you, as when you begin to take back your power and go, you be you. I understand you have your own pain. You're going to have to work with your own pain, and I work with mine. And I can be compassionate and love you in your pain. You don't have to be a victim of that pain. Is that?
Yeah.
Do you?
It 100% resonates. Yeah. Sometimes that you just have to accept the reality. I think you're right. Because a lot of us that are trying to fix the relationship that are, we're trying to get back to where it was the beginning when it was so great. Like you say, you're disempowering yourself and you're shoving them into something that they're not, right? That could be unfair to them as well. And then it's just this constant, super frustrating cycle.
Right.
But if you step back and you say, okay, I can still love you, and maybe you don't talk to them, maybe you do, depends on what level of abuse is happening. So you don't have to be like, hey, come into my house, I'll love you. It's like, no, you can love from a distance, but that
right.
helps dissipate that anger. Yeah.
But if you hang on to, oh, that person is so awful, I hate them, they're just, you know, you're not helping yourself. That's not good for you. And it doesn't help the other person either. It doesn't help them walk forward on their path, and it doesn't help you to walk forward on your path. And so there's a point where you got to say, I've been hurt. It hurt me. I wished it could have been different, but it wasn't. It isn't. And there are times when you really come into understanding and acceptance, and maybe empathy is a part of it, where you can be with other people's problems, and it's okay. There's times when you do need to separate, and there's times where other human beings are flawed. We're all flawed. And sometimes you can be with that process with somebody, but not step into it, not be the victim of it. That makes sense.
I think so. Yeah. So I'm thinking of a certain scenario where I don't ever want to talk to that person ever again, because every time I've opened up with love, I get stabbed in the back. And so it is an interesting situation where sometimes you can, yes, like let's say you're working on a relationship with another person who's willing to work, you can stay in that messiness together. And then there's other times where you just have to separate yourself and say, I wish you well. I wish that you find love and healing and prosperity in your life. But you're also putting up a wall, like they don't need to be in your life as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, either way, it depends on the situation.
Right.
I guess I'm saying you don't need to block out everybody. There may be extreme situations where you do, but I think it's gotten popularized in our culture, you know, to ice out people, ice out your parents, ice out your friend, you know, if they.
It's easier, right? But it's challenging to come
I think it's
together
bad
with
karma. You know, it's bad karma unless it's really, there are situations where it's really needed, but I think they're very rare, honestly. I think mostly what happens is we have a conflict with another person, and rather than work it out, rather than process it, rather than go deep and find the love underneath, we run away from it. And then when we do that, it can weaken us to run away from the next situation and never deal with our own ability to go beyond the issues and connect with the heart with another person, even if
I
we
hear you. Yeah,
stuff.
I wonder though. With narcissists, you are a correct. Are you a psychologist, or you were?
I'm a clinical psychologist. Yes.
Clinical. So, have you had narcissistic clients come into your office, and you just have to not take them on as a client anymore?
I wouldn't know if I describe them entirely as narcissists, people like that, that I have had to not take on. But there are definitely people who are very difficult, whether in any kind of situation, you know, and in marriages, in parental situations, in children, in France.
I think I would definitely agree with you that we don't want to so easily cut everyone out because it is very popularized.
Yeah.
But also, it can be a status of taboo to cut, especially your family out. So there's kind of like two sides yelling at us, like, and it's like, oh my God, which one do I do? And that can be confusing. So,
yeah. One of the yogic principles is ahimsa, which is to do no harm intentionally, not to yourself and not to other people. And so you have to, every situation, I think, needs to be approached with some amount of empathy. What is the path of least harm? You know, not what is the path of, I'm going to run away and hide in my corner. Where is the least harm? And that nobody can, that's not anything with a black and white answer. But many times when there is a breach of a close relationship rather than a working it through, it can leave, you know, if a parent outs their, you know, ISIS out their just child, or a child ISIS out their parents, it can do a lot of harm. It can leave a lot of pain. And I've certainly seen those situations a lot, because it is kind of a popular thing right now. So that's, I think I'm emphasizing the other side just because of the popularism of that, where I think it requires to look at where is the harm? And also, how are you harming the other person, and how are you harming yourself by your actions? And sometimes processing is difficult. Processing differences, processing real divisions or disagreements, or agree to disagree, you know.
Yeah, and I think also it is difficult to have those difficult conversations, and especially if you are someone like me who has an open will center, where you go in and they may be spewing, you know, not taking responsibility and kind of spewing BS at you, making excuses for their bad behavior, and you kind of buy it. And then it's hurtful after you've processed it. You're like, well, that didn't fix anything. And I still feel like I wasn't heard, seen, or loved. So it returns back to this concept of maybe they just, like, you just accept. Sometimes some of us have high standards and we wish people would love how we love, and they just don't have the tool set to.
Yeah.
So can you accept it without forcing them to be like how you want them to be? Which,
yeah.
And this may not be at all applicable to a abusive romantic relationship, because this definitely doesn't apply to how I experienced my romantic relationship. But it can apply into some difficult family dynamics. Yeah, it's really up to you. I feel like, does it go back to what does your heart say? What is that spirit that you can attune with? What are they calling you to do? And what does it say?
Yeah.
More than what does social media say?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you tune into your heart, you tune into your own empathy, you see, and where can you be in the, where can you change your dynamic to the relationship? And sometimes the only way is to separate from it. But there's a lot of other ways to change the dynamic in a relationship too, so that you don't feel victimized, you don't feel affected by what the other person thinks. You know, that's their problem. You know, you work with, don't make assumptions. You know, the four agreements, they're very powerful. And don't make assumptions, don't take things personally, they go a long way. But it's challenging to work with that and how to do that. So these, I don't think there's any one size fits all here, you know. It's,
there never is. That's a wise answer. There never is.
Yeah. But I do think that finding your own strength and autonomy and your connection to spirit can really bring the strength to work with the outer relationships in a way that is the most compassionate for everyone involved, including you, and that you can also find your power, so that when you're in relationship with somebody, you're not as affected by their issues.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a lifelong spiritual growth process.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Well, I'd love for you to tell us more about your book and where to find it.
My book, I'm going to hold it up. Yes. Into the Heart of the Infinite, a Spiritual Memoir of an Extraordinary Mystical Journey, is about my own journey of spirit and transformation. And it's available on Amazon. It's also available in bookstores, though it might not be on the shelf. If it's not on the shelf, you can ask for it. It's available in all kinds of different places, but you can easily get it on Amazon. And in another month or so, I think I'll have an audiobook of it also. I also have other books that work with other things in yogic life. Living Love, The Yoga of Yama and Niyama, this one. And Dharma for Awakening and Social Change. And these books, they all work with yogic meditation and the yama and niyama, work with the values, the ethical values of yoga, and how to live your life in the world, which is a lot of what we've been talking about, using these dynamic principles of the ancient principles from yoga to be in the world in a way that makes you in harmony with that deeper inner self and that deeper sense of spirit. Because that's the important part. Whatever you do in these relationships, it's more cultivating your relationship to yourself so that you are in harmony with your deeper source in whatever you do and in whatever choices you make in the people you relate to and how you relate.
I love that. I have to look into that book as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom.
It's wonderful to be here. If anybody does want to contact me, my website is yogama.org. That's yogama.org. And you can sign up for my web mailing list and leave me a little note that you want to get in touch. And I'd be happy to get in touch if you want anything. So, okay.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
It's wonderful to be here with you, Raven.
Yes. It was a pleasure gaining wisdom and helping us connect more to our higher self and our deeper spirituality. So I'm grateful for this interview with Maitreyi to help bring and center us into this divine love, divine spirit that we need to stay and remain connected to in times of great discomfort and sadness. Thank you so much for tuning in today's podcast. Don't forget to share it with a friend and tag me on Instagram at Empath and the Narcissist Podcast. And if you're feeling extra generous, subscribe to the podcast and write a review. You can grab my books, Empath and the Narcissist, on Amazon, and Empath's Guide to Rising Strong, which has a whole bunch of human design details in it. If you're wondering what in the world is going on in my chart, how do I read this? All those are in the link in the show notes. Until next time, keep your unique light shining. We're broken, it's tragic. We're not all elastic, but maybe there's magic. Believe you could have it. And I know of sadness, the anxious and panic, the